Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show, brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Auto, home, life business, whatever the insurance needs. Maybe you want a bundle. Well, they're going to find you the right insurance so you're covered. They're going to find you the best price. They're constantly monitoring for any updates. And if there's any claim, they'll go to work as if it happened to them. They are your partner. Customer service comes first. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. And if you want to go online, you can check it out at purdyinsurance.com. Great to have not only Bob Buhner here today. Bob?
How you doing, Steve?
Doing well. And it's great to have Kyle Alexander here today. Hello, Kyle. Well, last time I was there, I had a good long chance to talk with Kyle, and
he's doing great job here. He's down at 94KX most of the time, down in the catacombs of Sunbury Broadcasting,
in the basement. That's where they keep me, down in the basement.
Yeah, great to have him here today. You know, and the last time I was there, and I'm going to be there on Wednesday, by the way.
Oh.
Well, I've got to go to Scranton to Jay Paterno. Let's see. I'll be there. Jay will be there, and the new women's basketball coach Carolyn Keeger will be there. We have to. It's in Scranton. Well, I think by going there on Wednesday, it'll give me a head start to get there.
I would
so
say
I can get there in time. So we're going to do the show there.
Oh, good.
But the last time I was there, I had a really great talk with Kyle because I think a lot of people know Kyle's story with his mom, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm there, and Sean's asking some really good questions. I'm talking with Kyle. He's giving us some very interesting answers. And the soup, of course, barges in. Does he ask about how Kyle's doing now?
No.
So, I mean, it's like, he assumes that Kyle is a parent. But, I mean, it was just really.
We know.
I mean, Kyle, tell me I'm wrong. I mean, you were there. Tell me I'm wrong.
You describe a football game great. You describe basketball games great. And you describe that situation perfectly.
Yeah.
That is how it went down.
I just want to tell you right now, Pippa Man could finish in the top 10.
Yes.
We were just talking about something serious here, sir. Yeah. Oh, so am I. All right, so.
That's how it was today with that whole IndyCar thing. Whatever happened over the weekend, we had somebody in for a job interview, and we were out in the front lobby filling out paperwork, and Kevin comes up. Did you hear what happened over the weekend?
No. Hey, Steve, could I take a moment and pay tribute to the passing of a legendary football coach in central Pennsylvania and in the nation?
Yeah.
It's his name, George Chomp.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
He had an incredible career. He died this weekend at the age of 83.
I really liked him. The times I saw him at practice, talked to him at practice, he was awesome.
George, he was a Bloomsburg State Teachers College standout wrestler football player, graduated, first job over in Shamokin. He's 24 years old and has an outstanding season. So good that he ends up down at Harrisburg High School for six seasons, ages 25 through 31. His teams went 58-4 during that period of time. Again, hardly 30 years old. He then goes out to Ohio State back in 1968, joins Woody Hayes.
Yep.
And he was the quarterback coach out there. I think he had, like, Rex Kern and some great Buckeye players of that era. After that, he was good friends with John Robinson, the coach at USC, but there was this new startup team in the NFL called the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They hired John Robinson, and George Chomp went down as kind of the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. Really incredible. After that, he started going back in college football, and I was at a game. He was at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. they were in the national championship for D2 several times during his coaching career there. But in 1985, the Bloomsburg Huskies under George Landis, a Penn State grad, played the Big Indians of Indiana and George Chomp for the state conference championship at the stadium, and Bloomsburg beat them. But that didn't stop George, because his next stop was Marshall. And, of course, back in 1970, there was that terrible plane crash that wiped out the team and coaching staff. And although they rebounded a little bit, they really did not ever get up to the top. Well, he lands in Marshall, and they had, during his 4 or 5 years, the best era of winning in college football in his years. Then he went to the Naval Academy. Didn't have a really good seasons down there, but... he didn't give up coaching. He went back to Harrisburg, Central Dolphin, and, you know, set winning championships there. He's in lots of Hall of Fames, and he passed away this weekend, 83.
Our deepest condolences, and made incredible, incredible contributions at many levels to the game.
No question.
Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Kawhi Leonard gets the job done for the Raptors as they break through in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Brogdon inbounds to Mirotic. Mirotic right to left, whips the pass cross court to Bledsoe. Around a Lopez screen, gets into the lane. On the switch, he's got the big man Gasol. See if Bledsoe goes to work. Drives, spins right. Great deflection by Danny Green, tapping it ahead to Kawhi. Kawhi Leonard, left hand, cram, the claw, elevated and slammed it down. As the Raptors have gone up 4, Danny Green with the defense to get it started as the claw raked the Bucks to give Toronto the lead.
I'll take a guess here. That was the Raptors Radio Network. All right, so
it was. Sounds like a lot like the suit doing Chickalimmy Braves basketball. Just kidding.
sure. Okay, let's get to speaking of basketball. I had a chance to talk with Tad Boyle. He's the head basketball coach at Colorado. Now, you're like, you're having the head coach of Colorado on the show?
Yeah.
Right? Well, he is the chairman of the NCAA Basketball Rules Committee. On June 5th, they should rubber stamp the new rules. Well, let's... and so I had a chance to talk with him. Tad, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. We have a mutual friend in Tom McGrath, and I told Tom last week you were going to be on the show, and he said that, and you and I both know how close Tom was with Dave Gavitt. He said Dave Gavitt always felt it was very important for a player or coach to lead the rules committee, that if you have officials doing it, according to Dave Gavitt, changes in the game were not always going to happen in a good way. What is your perspective as a player, played at Kansas, now as a head basketball coach? How did that help you in shaping your ideas as to which way the rules should go?
You know, it's helped a lot, and I agree. I think the coaches have to have a pretty strong voice in this as we coach the game. But I also believe that, you know, and one of the things I've really enjoyed in being part of the committee and the process is the collaboration with the officials, because I think the officials need to have a voice at the table, and they do. J.D. Collins. And he always brings one of the top officials, as well as a coordinator of officials, to every rules committee meeting we have in May. And their input, because they're the one who's administering these rules, and they want the game to be better, just like we want the game to be better. So I think the thing I love about the committee is the collaboration that goes on between players, officials, and administrators, whether it's athletic directors or conference administrators at the conference level. You know, everybody wants to do what's good for the game, and you mentioned guys like Dave Gavitt and Tom McGrath. Those guys care about the game of basketball as much as anybody.
No question. A year ago, Penn State won the NIT, so I watched the three-point line play out, but also with an expanded lane. When it came to the three-point line, you didn't expand the lane. What does that do, in your opinion, for spacing on the floor, because the lane wasn't expanded?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at it like this, I think one of the things is the data for the three-point line is pretty clear and pretty evident. You look at percentages, you look at number of shots taken and made. The data is pretty clear. The widening of the lane data is really hard to get. I mean, you don't know. It's more of a perception, and does it, you know, does it help or does it hurt spacing? we're moving the three-point line out a foot and a half. Mm-hmm. And the lane, as it was proposed, would go out 2 feet on either side. So let's just say if you're talking about the side of the floor or, you know, the slot area of the floor, you're expanding the lane by 2 feet. You're expanding the three-point line by a foot and a half. You're actually losing space. Yeah. If your assumption is there's an offensive and defensive player on each line, the three-point line, the lane line. And so we felt as a committee, you know, let's start with the three-point line, expanding that, because we know that's going to hopefully help spacing. The numbers say the percentages went down about one percentage point, you know, from the NIT games from last year and this year. So not a significant number. And let's see how that works and see how that affects the game. And we'll have, you know, another 2 years to kind of see that. And then, you know, if the lane widening still has some legs and still has some momentum, let's look at it at that point. But rather than doing both at the same time, just felt like it was a prudent thing to do. Because the one thing we know about college basketball is we know college basketball is a great game, the way it is right now. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I did not want as a coach that was not on the rules committee, and certainly I don't want now that I am on the rules committee, is to make changes just to make changes. And so I think we want to be really slow and prudent in every change that we make and how it's going to affect the game. We want it to be a positive effect, obviously.
And I agree completely with not expanding the lane yet, because I agree with you. It's like if you're bringing out one, now you're bringing the defense back out further, and it kind of negates it. We'll see how it plays out.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, the next part of this is that you know, doing games this past season, a couple guys, and I'll give you an example. Late in the game, Penn State's playing Iowa, and you know what kind of shooter Jordy Bohannon is. And he shoots, he gets like a 25, 28-footer and knocks it down. And you know, Dick Girardi doing the game with me, we looked at each other and said, you know what, that's actually his range. I mean, as you go through this, you know, with the expanded three-point line, isn't it a reality now in today's game, in your opinion, that more guys do have that kind of range?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people call it the Steph Curry effect.
Yes.
You know,
yep.
And the effect he's had on the game. And, you know, what was interesting to me, again, we look at a lot of data. And I'll tell you, you mentioned, you know, my days at Kansas. I graduated from Kansas in 1985. We did not have the three-point line. It came into effect in 1986.
Right.
In 1986, the average Division I team attempted 9 three-point shots a game the first year it came in.
Mm-hmm.
This past year, I think that number was between 22 and 23. So it just shows you the effect that they're attempting a lot more of them. And you mentioned the range of players today. I don't think you're going to see a significant drop, especially after players have a chance after a year or two of adjusting, because a lot of players have range. I don't think the three-point shot as it was necessarily worth 3 points. And we'll see, you know, what this new change does in terms of percentages nationwide.
Next part of this deals with an offensive rebound. Instead of being recycled to 30, it would recycle to 20. That also was used in the NIT. The NBA goes from 24 to 14 now. Look, you're already across the timeline past the 10 seconds anyway. What was the rationale about doing this move? Do you think it can speed up the game?
Speed up the game, more possessions, more scoring were all the thoughts. And you mentioned the 10 seconds. You know, in college basketball, we have 10 seconds to get the ball from the backcourt to the front court. Well, if the ball's already in the front court and you get an offensive rebound, we're basically saying, hey, that 10 seconds that you needed to get across half court, you know, is not needed. Because it's not only just on an offensive rebound, but even if it's on let's say, a missed free throw and the offense gets the rebound or the ball gets tipped back and is controlled in the front court, the shot will be reset to 20 as well. So a couple different scenarios where it goes back to 20. But basically the rationale was you don't need the 10 seconds in the front court to get the ball into the front court. It's already there, so let's just reset it to 20.
Final 2 minutes, and by the way, and everybody ought to get the software for it, because I remember a year ago, the opening round of the NIT, Baylor couldn't do it because they didn't have the software and the scoreboard to do it.
Right.
So that happened.
Yeah.
Next part is allowing coaches to call timeouts themselves during a live ball situation, the final 2 minutes of both the second half and if it turns out any overtime.
Yeah, that was a lot of discussion, and I think every coach in the room felt like, hey, we want to be able to call timeouts. This is a great example of where I think officials kind of weighed in, and the one play that was very, very difficult for officials to officiate, and quite frankly was impossible to do, was when there's a loose ball on the floor, as you know, as happens in college basketball, and players are trying to gain control of it, and you've got a coach, you know, maybe with an official right in front of him yelling timeout, timeout, and that official blows his whistle to grant a timeout, and really possession's not been determined yet. And another official might be happening across the court is looking, and, you know, whose ball is it? And there really is no control of the ball. The whole idea of not letting coaches timeout to call timeout was to get rid of that play and the inequities of that play. And it would happen at critical points of the game. We've decided in the last 2 minutes, you know, if coaches want to call a timeout, I think officials are going to look at that play and be very reluctant to grant a timeout until the ball is controlled. But that was a great example of the collaboration between coaches and officials to say, hey, how can we get kind of the best of both worlds? Because I think a lot of coaches felt like, you know, at the end of the games, changing defenses, that sort of thing, they want the ability to help their players and call timeouts, and that's what we came up with. So we'll see how that works.
Right. When it comes to basket interference or goaltending, again, final 2 minutes or the final 2 minutes of overtime, it can now become reviewable. My opinion's always been on goaltending. I've always felt that any ball that, if it hit the backboard, you're trying to determine whether it hit the backboard or not. I always felt that was reviewable, should be reviewable, because there's so many cameras around the thing. How difficult is this one? I know it's only the final 2 minutes and the final 2 minutes of overtime. On a ball where you're trying to determine the arc of it.
Well, here's number one. It's the most difficult play to call, not only live, but even on replay. I mean, how many times, even if on replay, you're like, oh, was it at the apex or not? Was it on the way down? I mean, it's a difficult play to call regardless. Now, the thing to understand is this is only reviewable if a whistle is blown.
Okay.
So, that's another example of officials in the room that really helped coaches, because I think everybody, the layman says, that should be reviewable. You know, everybody talks about the Kentucky LSU game.
Right.
Okay, the Kentucky LSU game, that should be reviewable. Well, there was no goaltending called. There was no basket interference called. Well, if you want that to be reviewable on a no call, you're going to open up a can of worms that people don't realize.
Yeah.
And that is, the officials are going to blow the whistle and go to the monitor to see, was it a goaltending or was it not? Well, when they blow the whistle, when the shot is blocked, whose ball is it?
Right.
And you could get a situation where they blow the whistle, it was a legitimate block, and now they go to the arrow, and the offense gets the ball back.
Right.
And if the whistle's not blown, they block the shot, and maybe they're going down to score 2 points on the other end. So you've actually penalized the defense by a great defensive play by putting a replay rule in. Because what's the official going to do if it's close?
Right.
They're going to blow the whistle and go to the monitor.
Right. Exactly.
We don't want that. So that's why it is reviewable only if the official blew the whistle.
And, by the way, only in the final 2 minutes or the final 2 minutes.
And only in the final 2 minutes of the game, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Was there any discussion, as you said earlier, a lot of elements of this game are great as they are. Complete agreement there. Was there any discussion at all about quarters?
There was discussion on quarters. A little bit of a non-starter, just not because people don't want it or don't think it's good for the game. It's just that with the contracts that are in place right now with media partners, you know, both at the conference level and certainly, with the NCAA tournament, trying to fit all the inventory of the commercials in to a quarter system. It's very, very difficult, very choppy, doesn't let the game flow, extends the time of the games. Again, this was experimented in the NIT, as you know, over the last couple of years. So, again, looked at the data there and just felt like that's not the direction that is best for the game of college basketball right now, as it stands.
Completely.
Doesn't mean it won't happen in the future, though.
Right. No, I understand that, but I do completely agree with that. I think that's exactly the way it should go. Hey, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it, I think you gave everybody a really great perspective, as usual, and hopefully our paths will cross again along the line. I think the last time I was around you was probably that tournament in Las Vegas a couple, 3 years ago, so Penn State.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
I remember that, so I appreciate your time, and thanks for all you do.
Hey, thank you, Coach. Thanks for all you do. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Tab Boyle, head basketball coach at Colorado, head of the NCAA Basketball Rules Committee. They should have this ratified on June 5th. Again, you know, we try to take everybody as far wide-ranging on this show as possible. That's why we got them on the show. We'll come back. More in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Steve and I have been talking about Penn State lacrosse. We had a great interview with the basketball coach at the University of Colorado about the impending rule changes in college basketball, moving the three-point line out a foot and a half. And Kyle, you and I talked during the break. We got to worry about the guy who has to repaint those lines. Perhaps they can get some of the guys that do the line painting from PennDOT and get them in the Bryce Jordan and all the arenas around the country and repaint those three-point lines.
You know, and I often wondered how they did that and made it so perfect. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's flawless how they do a basketball court or even lining a football field. How do you get them that? How do you get them that straight?
GPS.
Is that how they do it?
Yeah, apparently. I have no idea.
Sounds like a good answer.
Sorry, I was on the phone with Char Moret.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah, she called me. We're trying to get something together with her and Tara McGuire, because Tara's making a former player, making a contribution to help the field hockey program. So what we're going to do is, for the Roar segments on TV, we're going to get one of them's going to be on Char's 33-year career as the head coach. And one is going to be on the
taking your calls at 800-795.
I know you want to end the show. I got it. But
yeah, sorry about that.
Kyle, I understand the desire. You are not the first producer to sit in that chair saying, God, I hope it's over.
No,
telling you what, there's all kinds of stuff. There's stuff like going by itself. And yeah. It's like poltergeist.
Okay.
So we think it's the suit. We think it's the suit.
Captain Saboteur.
Yep.
They both begin with an S. So Char, of course, was at Boston College, and Shel Tambroni played for it at BC, and then she got offered the Penn State job. Well, Shel then transfers to Penn State. Well, eventually, Shell meets Jeff Tambroni. They get married, okay, eventually.
Oh, lovely story.
Right, and now they're back here. Well, it's been, I'll tell you, it is, we were talking a little bit about the journey, but because I'm going to interview Shar for the TV thing on Thursday morning. And it was just interesting because she's going out to play in the Ladies League Golf right now. I said, well, I said, you can count me out on that one. I got to cut my lawn. Count me out on that one. But I mean, see, Shar and I went to school together here.
Ah.
So I have known her since we were undergrads. And, you know, including her going to the Olympics, getting aced out because President Carter said no.
That would have been 1980, right?
Yep. Then going in 84. And, you know, her team in 84 in Los Angeles won a bronze medal. Won a bronze medal. It's one of the things we'll talk about with her. All right. It's only a three-minute interview. I'm going to be in there, you know, for probably for a half an hour with her on Thursday. But we're going to do this. And, and that was what the call was about.
Oh,
but,
good.
But it's amazing because she was in the stands yesterday because Char's husband has a place in Brantford. So Shell and the kids stayed with them, and then she was in the stands yesterday because I said, I didn't see you. I said, but I was up in the box, and then I was on the field, so I didn't get a chance. But, you know, this is really exciting. You know, obviously what's happened with the wrestling program here, it's just unbelievable. Where I just hope people don't get spoiled by it. Don't get spoiled by the wrestling. Appreciate all of them. Because from 1953 until 2010, they didn't win.
No.
I mean, they won, but they didn't win national titles. Right. And so now you've got this happening. And, you know, it's a huge accomplishment to get to the Final Four. But boy, once you're there, you know what? Never, ever assume you're going to get there again. Never make that assumption. Well, we'll be back here a few times. Okay, you might be back there a few times. All right, you might be. Okay? But at the same time, don't make the assumption you're going to be. So you go out and you take every moment, and like for this particular team, do everything you can to win it now, because the opportunity is there now. And Jeff has done a remarkable job. And not only that, in the world of coaching, or just if he happened to be your neighbor, he's just a flat-out good guy. Just one of those guys, a flat-out good guy, that if you don't like Jeff Tambroni, you don't like people. And so I am thrilled for him that he's been able to do this. And I know the last hour we played the interview with him.
Mm-hmm.
For those who didn't hear the last hour, what we'll do is we're going to replay that for you.
After the first quarter, you win 18 of the next 26 faceoffs. What did it mean to control the middle third between faceoffs and ground balls today?
Yeah, I thought that meant everything. You know, we came in here, and I knew that talent, we matched up with Loyola, but I just felt like if we were going to take just talent and put it to chance, then that would take too much of this game and put it at the balance of just who was going to make plays. And they have a tremendously talented team as well. We talked about winning the stat, winning the elements that don't necessarily stood up on the stat sheet. Now, ground balls and faceoffs are certainly two of them, but just the effort stat, I thought that led to both of those. Jerry certainly got on a rhythm at the faceoff X, but I thought the way our guys competed for ground balls and the way it showed up in the stat sheet was the absolute difference in the game today.
You went to Jake a couple times in the first quarter. Is Jerry the kind of guy that if he gets off kilter a little bit, if he watches, he can get himself back on track?
It's such a, you know, I would say the goalie position, the face-off position, all eyes are on you. And it looks like, you know, you're the only one there without much support, even though there is a lot of support in front of the goalie, a lot of support on the wings, the face-offs. So it is tough mentally. You got to be a mentally tough young man to be in there, especially when you're not doing all that well. You're struggling because you constantly feel like you're letting your teammates down. I thought it was a really nice move by John Hogan, our assistant coach, to give him a break and do just that. He has not always been great at that because I think you tend to lose confidence and don't come in stronger. But to his credit, he came back and he was stronger than he was before, which says everything you need to know about, you know, Gerard's mental toughness today.
Okay, now you get in the first quarter, you know how it plays out. Colby made half of his saves in that first quarter. He made six of them. it seems like when you score 21, he flies under the radar. How big was he for you today?
Yeah, I would agree, and I think that's a real good point that you make, because he got us off to a start where we're down by a goal, but he kept us in it, you know, even though that could have been a lot worse in the first half. So I don't think our guys stopped believing there, but if the score was 7 or 8 to 4, and maybe we start to change or tighten up a little bit. And it's a really good offense. The other side is Lille's a really good offense. As the game went on, they took some really good shots from some really good places. We probably didn't protect him as well as we could have or should have. But coming out, he was extremely ready. I don't think we were ready against UMBC in that position. So I give Colby a lot of credit. I thought he was extremely ready today and did enough to give us enough confidence or to get us over the hump today.
There was that point where you scored 11 of the 12 goals, including 7 unanswered. What kind of job did your team do creating lanes?
Yeah, well, I think that is when we're at our best, when these guys are working for each other, and I thought that's what they did today. I thought in the third quarter we hurt ourselves. We were our greatest enemy. Yeah. Loyola was taking advantage of a lot of stuff in our defensive end, and we were our worst enemy in the offensive end. The ball stopped moving. We were getting in each other's way. So as much as it was an asset for us in the second quarter, it went all the way to the other side in that third quarter. But to know that these guys can rev it back up in the fourth quarter and regain that momentum says a lot about who they are.
Great teams know how to close. You went 4-0 in the fourth quarter. What did they show you when everything was on the line?
Belief. You know, I truly believe that these guys believe in themselves and they believe in that dream and they're holding on to it so tight. You know, I thought in that last 15 minutes they showed a lot of resiliency, and I'm really proud of them because of it.
Jeff, you've been on this road before, but you know, when you and I were in the field, I said, look, I don't think people realize all the ups and downs that have been in this thing, including tragedy along the way. What has it taken mentally as well as physically to be at the point you are now?
It's definitely taken its toll. I'll be very honest, it's definitely taken its toll. And, you know, I knew the undertaking was going to be a challenging one. I wasn't sure I recognized all of the challenges, but that's part of the fun. When you're on the other side or starting to get to the other side, that's part of the fun. Easier to say that now than it was when we were going through it. But I had some really good people around me, assistant coaches, some really good kids that were leading this team. And like I said in there, the administration has never stopped believing. I really appreciate their focus, not just on winning, but about building a program with good kids, connecting the alums, trying to do the right things in and around campus. And, you know, I think for the most part, we're not there by any stretch of the imagination, but we're just starting to see a little bit of that light, and I appreciate them just allowing us to at least have that glimmer so that we can make through with the goals that we've set a long time ago.
Finally, you've lived through this to get to a Final Four yourself, so you understand the media obligations, you understand the atmosphere around it. How can you now impart to your team what to expect so they can then play Penn State lacrosse and not worry about the outside distractions?
Yeah, I'm not sure anything I'm going to be able to say is going to prepare these guys for exactly what they're going to face, having never been there before. But I think what I can say is, and this is what we've said straight along, and these guys have responded really well, you got to be themselves. You got to be you. And I think if we can just continue to impress upon these guys that when we move in there, they got here for a certain reason, and that was not to perform for people out in the bleachers. It was to compete and play as hard as they possibly could for each other. And I think if we can continue to keep doing that, try to focus on the little things, I think this is a stage where you really want to focus on simplicity versus complexity. I think we'll really help these guys navigate their way through their first one and hopefully a very successful one.
Jeff, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And again, I think, when you get to this stage, and that's why I asked him this question, this is not like a regular season game. The reason it's not like, even though in the end it's like another game, here's the difference leading into it. There'll be more media, so there's more media obligations. Okay? Tickets. People want tickets. They're going through you, the player, to get tickets. Suddenly relatives that don't even show up at the family reunion suddenly like claim you as family, and now they want tickets. And you do have to deal with that. Now, I think it has gotten to the point that where, for the most part, organizations have found a formula to deal with all that, to get the players out of that mix as often as possible. But there's going to be more on them. The important time is when you have that practice time. And in the practice time, it is like practice time in April. It's like practice time in March. It's closed. It's just you. And that's where you can bring that sense of normalcy back.
And Jeff's been through this before. There's nothing he's going to be able to tell them. At least he's been through it. He knows how to manage it because he's coached in a Final Four. To how do you handle the extra media? How do you handle the extra attention? How do you handle the ticket requests? I haven't even gotten around to playing the game yet. Well, that's why. And now they're not in school. They're not in school. And that I think that becomes a very important component to the, to this for Penn State. So you don't have, you know, you may have, now to be honest with you, there may be a couple of guys that are taking the first 6 week session, you know, for credits and things like that. They might be, but for the most part, none of them are in class right now. So now they could just go on and just be a lacrosse team. And I think that will help them.
Steve, where do the players get housed now that, say, the semester is over and we've got this, you know, championship weekend coming up and this week? What do they do if they're in the, say, West Halls as a student athlete and now, you know, the dorms are closed? What happens?
Well, they're able to stay in their apartments.
Okay.
That's not a problem for them because they're a spring sport, just like track and field. Track and field's still going on right now. Baseball extended. So when you're a spring sport, there are extensions put in place to allow you to be. This is not like the winter time, for example, when you're between semesters.
Right.
Where they try to take the heat and turn the heat down in the buildings.
Yeah.
Well, in all seriousness, to save money. In other words, between December 22nd and January 2nd, usually, just even the offices, they'll take the heat and they'll roll it back in there just to save money because there's nobody working. Well, it's the same thing in the dorms. So now you got to put them up in a hotel or you got to find one. But this, because it's this time of the year, you don't have to worry about things like that. So it's just a question of allowing them to keep their rooms and let them do that. So
okay.
They're fine. Yeah, so they're fine with that. But, you know, this is great. Let's see if they can add to what the wrestling team did in winning their national championship. National championships.
Yeah, eight out of nine.
It's just, how do you... you can't even begin to describe what they've done with wrestling
and
here.
Steve,
even,
help is on the way.
It's hard to describe it.
Yeah, help is on the way with the incoming freshman recruits. Holy cow.
Well, let's face it. This is a destination place for wrestling. It's a destination place. If you want to make your name in wrestling and you want to be someone that puts yourself on a path to maybe being an Olympic champion, even though that hasn't happened here yet.
It's coming.
If you want to put yourself on the path to being an Olympic champion, you want to be here. There's no other place you really want to go.
I'm thinking David Taylor has a nice chance for a gold medal.
I will see David this summer. Of course, he's around here anyway.
Yeah, in Nittany Lion Wrestling Club.
Yeah, so he's around here anyway. But I know he's going to make an appearance at the Spikes Ballpark, and we're trying to set up something. We're going to try to set up something with him because there's another project that we're working on for Roar that I don't want to get into.
Okay.
I don't want to get into because if I get into it, the subject of it's not going to be enamored with the subject of it.
All right. Well, you're just going to tease us then.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So we have a strategy there
okay.
for that. It'll work. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's great to have Bob Buhner here today. What's been an interesting show, Jeff Tambroni joining us along with Tab Boyle, the head basketball coach at Colorado, because he's head of the Rules Committee. And again, we try to do things in such a way on the show where we try to keep people ahead of the game. And we've been telling you that the rules were probably going to change in college basketball. This was the year the rules change. It goes every 2 years. They're going to move the three-point line back, the offensive rebounding. Get offensive rebound, go from 30 to 20. So we had him on the show.
Yeah, that was
to follow that up.
Absolutely interesting interview, Steve. And really, if you're a basketball fan like you and I are, I go to see Bucknell play D1 basketball and you at Penn State. As we know, the name of the game is rules. Just simply when they made the three-point basket, changed the game around back in 1986. And, you know, rules, the coaches that are some of the best coaches are the guys that know the rule book upside down, back and forth.
Right.
So, I'd be fascinating to see what happens to the number of three-point shots attempted and the number made by moving that extra 1.5 feet.
You know what? I don't think that's going to change at all. Oh, by the way, Josh Reeves is going to work out either tonight or tomorrow with the Celtics.
Oh.
All right. So the Celtics have 3 second-round picks. I'm not saying Josh is going to get picked. I'm just stating that fact. But Josh is going to work out for the Celtics. He's going to interview with the Celtics, work with them, and then we'll see what they want to do moving forward. Maybe he ends up being a free agent. But the bottom line is Josh will be playing for some NBA team summer league. He'll be playing for somebody in the summer league. Then we'll go from there as to whether he gets a training camp invite. But he is going to meet with the Celtics.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, the Celtics have nothing to do right now. I mean, they're not in the playoffs.
No, I know.
Oh, I know. That's that New England thing, Steve.
Well, I was there. And people were all talking about the Bruins.
I understand completely.
They were not talking about the Celtics.
No, there was higher expectations for the Celtics. But, you know, if Josh Reeves can get a hold in Boston, I think that's obviously a great move for him.
Right. Exactly right.
Now he's done with his Penn State eligibility because of all of this.
Yes. Yeah, he was a senior.
That's right. Yeah, but he had no extra years left where he could do a graduate transfer or anything like that.
No, he's done. He played 4 years straight through, so he's done. Now we're waiting on what Lamar Stevens wants to do, because Lamar was not invited to the G League Elite Camp or to the Combine. And
oh, that's kind of a hint.
Well, yeah, it is. But, you know, it depends on what guys want to do today. It's up to them. You know, I mean, some guys want to go to Europe. I mean, but he's got between now and Wednesday the 29th, so 9 more days.
I was going to say, not long.
To declare what he's doing. So.
And will he be, in discussion with Pat Chambers and all of that between now and then?
When you get your evaluations, they are sent to the head basketball coach.
Aha.
So Pat gets the same email Lamar does on his evaluations.
Yeah. And
so that's how it works.
All right.
Hey. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Steve.
Great week of work in New Zealand.
Oh, thank you.
Unfortunately, the racing expert had no idea who Bruce McLaren was.
Yep.
I thought that was a down moment in the show when two people that don't know nearly as much as he does knew way more than he did. I mean, I thought that was sad.
True.
I mean, I thought it was sad.
Well, we look forward, if you're able to make it on Wednesday, to come down to Broadcast Mountain, as we call it.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Because I've got to be in Scranton with Carolyn Keeger, Wayne Sebastianelli, Jay Paterno for Wednesday night. We're at Fiorelli's.
Yes.
It'll be a great chance for everybody there to meet Carolyn, I think she's going to be awesome here. And by the way, congratulations to Kelly Mazzani.
Oh, my goodness.
For being a part of the Bucknell women's basketball staff. Tell you, Kelly's going to be a head coach someday. She's good.
Your station
no
for
question.
News, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.